Hey everyone, this is Jordan.
And I'm Maya.
And today we'll be discussing the Menendez Brothers Therapy Tape, or as it's known otherwise as the 1211 tape.
Sometimes called the Confession Tape, also.
That too, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, this is like one of my favorite pieces of evidence from this trial because I think it's really fascinating to go through it and look at how it can be interpreted from different perspectives. And it really helped me go through when I was first studying this case to think about, like, how does this fit in with what I think happened? How does this fit in with the other side? And kind of testing my views against what was on this tape. So I'm really excited to go through it today.
Yeah, I feel the same way about it, and it's just such like an interesting piece of evidence, and there's so many different ways to interpret different things. But I also find it very interesting because, according to, I believe it was the juror from the second trial, Andrew Wolfgang, he has said that this tape is basically what got him to convict of first degree murder. So it's definitely important in that aspect.
Trigger warning for this episode: we discuss suicidal ideation and we mention child emotional, physical, and sexual abuse. I feel like in the popular media about this case, this tape, like, it's called the Confession Tape, and people just know it as, like, the brothers said they killed their parents on this tape, therefore they murdered their parents, and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
But, like, there's so much more in this tape that it goes against that.
Yeah. No one really knows what this piece of evidence is. Like, it gets misconstrued in so many different... Even, like, in actual documentaries, like, I hear, oh, this was a tape that, like, it was just a regular therapy session and Dr. Ozil was secretly recording them without their knowledge, and it gets misconstrued in so many different documentaries that most people have no idea what they're talking about when they're actually referencing this tape. Because it's called, it's like what we said at the start, right? It's also called the Confession Tape, but it's not really a confession tape.
No, it's not at all. It's a therapy session.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, everything about this case is so much more complicated than the media makes it out to be.
Mm-hmm. What was sort of the inciting incident for the tape to be made?
Well, so, like we talked about in our last episode, which, if you haven't listened to our last episode about Dr. Ozil, the brother's therapist, definitely listen to that before you listen to this episode. Eric had confessed to Ozil that the brothers killed their parents, and they had two sessions, one on October 31st and one on November 2nd of 1989. And then after that, I don't think they saw Ozil until they made this tape, right?
I believe so.
But Ozil called the brothers and said that he was feeling very nervous because they hadn't spoken in a while. He wanted to get their voices on tape because he wanted to use it, allegedly, to help them if they were ever arrested.
Yeah.
I feel like what's important about that to me is that it wasn't the brothers that initiated this session, it was the therapist. And, like, the brothers have said that they wanted to have as little contact with Ozil as possible because they didn't trust him. So I think that on the surface is going to make this tape unreliable as, like, an accurate source of information.
Yeah, and that's just one of many things which make this tape unreliable. So we know from witnesses like Jude Law and Smith that Ozil wanted to get the brothers on tape. I believe in Jude Law's testimony, she said that he wanted to get them on tape for his own, like, safety. But it's a defense theory that, like, he wanted the tape for blackmail material, basically. So, like, he clearly has his own reasons and motivations for this that probably aren't in the best interest of the brothers. But yeah, I guess then we can talk about, like, the Chalif situation, which there's not a lot of information about, but we know a little bit about it.
Yeah. We talked about this in our last episode, too, but Lyle had told the brother's attorney, Gerald Chaliff, that they had killed their parents and that Eric had confessed that to the therapist and that, I mean, we don't know exactly what he said, but generally that they were kind of in a sticky situation with the therapist.
The psychologist, Ozeal, that was a damning set of recollections by him about your going, getting very upset at Eric for having confided in his psychologist about what he had done, threatening his life, and doing that consistently to him, either in jest or seriously. Very damning account from that psychologist. How do you explain it?
That's not accurate either. That's another media account. The psychologist, all Eric did was reveal to him that he had killed his parents and he was responsible. He did not tell him why. I did not threaten him in any way. What I did after the session was go and consult an attorney and say, what do I do about Dr. Ozeal, who my brother just confessed to?
I'd say, like, but just overall, like, we know that Lyle contacted their lawyer, Gerald Chaliff, beforehand. Chaliff then met with Ozeal, and then after he had met with Ozeal, then the tape was made. But I think we can sort of infer from that that the brothers are worried about Ozeal, because Ozeal said, okay, I feel threatened. The brothers in their testimony have, like, say that they were basically trying to basically, like, appease Ozeal and basically be like, no, like, we're not gonna do anything, nothing's gonna happen, like, don't turn us into the police, basically. So from that, we can kind of infer that Lyle is worried, so he goes to his lawyer and says, hey, we're in this situation, can you help us out? And then I think that's when Chaliff went to speak with Ozeal.
Yeah, and I mean, like we said in our last episode, I feel like the fact that before this tape was made, Lyle had gone to someone else and, like, tried to get help with this situation they were in with Ozeal is, like, pretty strong proof to me that, like, the brothers did not trust Ozeal.
Yeah.
And because they didn't trust him, they're not going to be honest with him about this incredibly private and shameful thing that led to them killing their parents.
Yeah. I know during the trial, like, they didn't, like, Chaliff didn't really come up, and I think that's to do with, like, something to do with, like, attorney-client privilege, I think.
Yeah, I don't think that they were allowed to discuss, like, what Lyle told his attorney, because that's, like, privileged information.
That's also why we don't know, like, a lot of, like, the details here.
Yeah, so the brothers, after this tape was made, they didn't see Ozeal again until the trial.
Yeah.
Like, they never saw him again in a therapy context.
I think that's further evidence of how, like, the tape is not reliable, because they weren't ongoing patients of Ozeal's after this tape was made. And it's clear that the brothers, like, didn't want to be involved with Ozeal, and it's just further evidence of them not trusting him, which is also, again, why the tape is not reliable.
So, before the first trial, there had been, like, years of legal proceedings about if the contents of the therapy sessions that the brothers had with Ozeal could be testified to in court. Because, you know, normally, like, a therapist patient relationship is, like, confidential, and that wouldn't be allowed to be introduced into, like, a court hearing or a court case. But before the first trial started, this California Supreme Court ruled that the brother's therapist could testify about what the brothers said to him in their sessions because he had been threatened. But then that same ruling said that the therapy tape couldn't be testified to or couldn't be played in court because the therapist wasn't threatened at that point. Entering into the first trial, that was, like, kind of the assumption about how the evidence would come in. But in the middle of the first trial, after the brothers had testified and after Ozeal had testified, the judge in the case reversed this ruling and he allowed the tape to be played. Do you remember, like, why he allowed it in?
I can't remember the exact details, but I do know that it was specifically to do with the prosecution arguing that since the brothers had basically entered their mental state as a defense, since the whole defense theory is that the brothers killed because they were experiencing certain psychological effects due to the abuse, which then caused them to fear their parents on the night they killed their parents. And so because of that, the judge basically agreed with the prosecution and said, okay, well, since they've put their mental state on trial, it's only fair that the tape should come into evidence as well. I have some issues with that overall. I mean, first of all, I don't think Ozil should have even been allowed to have testified in the first trial anyway. I just don't... The patient-therapist relationship is supposed to be confidential for a reason. And unless there's, like, direct evidence that in these sessions, like, a patient blatantly threatened to harm or kill a therapist, like, I just don't think that should come into evidence in a trial, in my opinion. I just don't think it should. And since the making of the tape is so dubious, and at the time there was conflicting reports on how the tape was made, why it was conducted, was it a therapy session, wasn't it a therapy session, makes it too unreliable as a piece of evidence. And I just don't agree that simply because the brothers put their mental state on trial that, like, that should allow that kind of evidence.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't think that anything that was said to a therapist in confidence should be allowed to be admitted into evidence. Like, I guess I think in this case that Ozil should have been allowed to say that the brothers threatened him, because that's, like, could be, like, proof that they're, you know, violent or whatever, if they're, like, threatening people, but not the details of, like, what they told him about, like, the crime itself.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, there's a reason why the tape wasn't permitted in the first place, because even if you do believe that the brothers threatened Ozil, which, I mean... we've gone over before why the evidence for that is lacking. But even if you do believe that, I don't think it's then okay to bring statements in from supposed therapy into evidence. Like, I don't know, the whole situation just... I don't know, it's messy.
Yeah. I think the fact that, like, Stanley Weisberg overturned the ruling of the, like, California Supreme Court shows his bias in this case, personally. I mean, to me, it's like they'd gone through like 3 or 4 years of deciding what parts of the therapy sessions should be permitted in, and then, like, in the middle of the trial, he just decides to, like, go over the heads of, like, the California Supreme Court. Like, that to me is, like, blatant prosecution bias.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so our plan for this episode is that we'll kind of go through some key themes in the tape and talk about why we believe certain things about what the brothers said on this tape and what the therapy experts who testified in the trial said about, like, their perceptions of the tape. Both about, like, what the brothers say on the tape, but also how Ozil acts on the tape in terms of, like, his quality of therapy that he's giving to these clients, basically. Since we're going through, you know, kind of themes on the tape instead of going through it line by line, definitely recommend listening to this tape before listening to our analysis. We'll put in the description a transcript of the tape. It would definitely help, like, follow along with what they're saying on the tape.
Yeah.
Since the brothers and Ozil had testified before this tape was allowed in, it kind of set up a situation where we can, like, compare their testimony to how they talk on the tape and see, like, whose testimony was more accurate to the situation.
Yeah, it's a good point. Since the brothers had already testified and Ozil, we already had information directly from them speaking about how the sessions went, why were they conducted, how were they conducted. So then the fact that we get to listen to the tape afterwards is pretty nice to have as evidence. You can, like you said, you can compare it to the brother's testimony and Ozil's testimony and see how accurate things are.
What I put on this particular board is the proof that Dr. Ozeal lied to you about what was said to him on October 31st and November 7th. And lied to you about the bad stuff. And what I've done on the left is what he testified occurred in those sessions. And then on the right, whether the tape confirms or does not confirm that testimony. And on October 31st, he started out, and I can do this with my little copy so I don't block you. He started out saying that Eric came to him tearful and remorseful and sad and suicidal and all the rest of it. And apparently he was telling the truth about how Eric was feeling, because Eric sounds exactly the same and is saying the same things on the tape. On October 31st and November 2nd, he claims Eric expressed hatred for his father. On the tape, you can hear Eric talking only about how he loves his parents and regrets what he's done and wishes he could undo it. On October 31st and November 2nd, Dr. Ozeal claims that Eric said his father was controlling and domineering and blah, blah, blah. On the tape, although Ozeal keeps suggesting that 13 times in one speech, but not just in that one speech, neither Eric nor Lyle even ever say, yes, my father was controlling and we hated him and we had to stop it. On October 31st and November 2nd, Dr. Ozeal says there was a discussion about the mother was such a pitiful mess that she was killed because she didn't want to live anyway. And both Eric and Lyle testified that, yes, that was a suggestion of Dr. Ozeal's, and they signed on to it because they felt so guilty that it made them feel slightly better to think that their mother wouldn't have wanted to live anyway. And on the tape, Dr. Ozeal discusses that, and Eric agrees with him.
The key takeaway from it is that much of what essentially the brothers testified to is basically what the tape is. So during the brothers' testimony, the short of it, of how they described these sessions with Ozeal, is that they sort of just went to him because of Eric's suicidality, and that they felt kind of pressured and possibly like they were being blackmailed by Ozeal. They were worried he was going to go to the police. So they agreed to go and see him, and they basically just kind of went along with his theories on, like, why the killings happened and sort of, like, general motives. And that is essentially what can be heard on the tape.
Yeah. They do talk a lot about, like, things that happened in the past, especially things that were happening about 3 years before the brothers killed their parents, which was when Kitty had just found out about Jose's affair. It was like an 8-year affair, and she was suicidal, and she was, you know, essentially miserable. According to the brothers, Ozeal had sort of used that as like a theory about why they would have killed her, that they were putting her out of her misery because she was so depressed. But a main point that the defense kind of tried to make was that was something that happened 3 years before the brothers actually killed their parents. So if that was truly their motive for killing their mother, like, it doesn't make sense that they would have waited 3 years to do it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a theme that comes up in the tape a lot. A lot of what they're speaking about, like, is not what is happening in 1989 around the time of the killings. A lot of what they refer to are things that happened when they initially moved to California, like Jose's affairs coming out, Kitty wanting to divorce Jose, Kitty being, like, depressed and suicidal all the time because of the affairs. A lot of that information comes from when the family first moved to California. So that's sort of the first clue that the brothers may not be being totally honest about motives and reasons for why they killed their parents.
Yeah. Something I found really interesting was that most of the tape is a discussion about this time in 1986 when they moved to California. But a lot of the time when the brothers actually talk about the idea of, like, mercy killing Kitty, they mention it as, like, something that they've thought about afterwards. That in the time since they killed their parents, they thought, oh, yeah, I guess we were kind of doing her a favor. Instead of, like, oh, yeah, well, I thought it would be doing her a favor to kill her, so then I killed her.
Yeah.
A good example of this, actually, is there's a line where Lyle says,
I kept thinking it over almost as if it was true, almost as if I was like an instrument of hers in killing herself. That's where we sort of feel like, you mentioned before, that we were doing her and us a favor. and putting her out of her misery, really.
He's referring to this idea that they would mercy kill Kitty. First of all, he says, like, almost as if it were true, which is like, okay, so it's not true. But then he also says that Ozeal had mentioned this idea that they were doing her a favor, and that was what was driving him to discuss this.
Yeah, I mean, Lyle says that, right, like you mentioned before. So it's clearly referring to something that Ozeal has told them before.
Yeah. So to me, like, while yes, they do, they are talking a lot about this time period where Kitty was particularly depressed and suicidal, the times that the brothers actually connect that to the killings, it's in like a hypothetical situation, like if we had killed her because of this.
Mm-hmm. Quite early on in the tape, there's a part where Ozeal says directly to them, oh, when you ended up killing your mom, did you feel like you were sparing her? And Eric says, first of all, there was no way, never could she live without my father. But before that in the tape, Eric is talking about when they first moved to California, he would hear through the walls his parents arguing about getting divorced, and he specifically says that his dad refused and, like, wouldn't get divorced and didn't want to get divorced and wanted Kitty to stay. So that implies that it was Kitty who wanted to get divorced, right? But it's a bit of a contradiction to say, yeah, my mum wanted to get divorced, she was trying to get divorced, she wanted to get away from him, she wanted to leave, and then almost immediately after say, actually, there was no way that she could live without my dad. Do you kind of get what I'm saying with that?
Yeah.
I feel like it sort of lends credence to the idea that they're really just talking about Ozil's theories and motives about the case, or about the killings.
No, I know what you're saying. Like, I think the whole defense theory about, like, this mercy-killing theory is that it doesn't make sense. Like, it's not psychologically consistent that the brothers would want to mercy-kill their mom 3 years after she had been super depressed and suicidal. And that's why, like, the tape doesn't make sense with, like, the reality of what was going on in the family.
Yeah. The brothers are always referring to things that happened quite a long time in the past, and they don't refer to, like, specific events that happened around the time of the killings.
Yeah, there's a few points, actually, where, like, the brothers kind of start getting close to talking about the present-day issues, and then they'll, like, pause and then change the subject. There's a place where Lyle says,
"But I still don't think it had anything to do with killing him. It had nothing to do with us. It had to do with me realizing a number of things that all culminated, which was, and could have culminated at any point. And it was just a question of Erica getting together and somebody bringing it up and us realizing the value in it, which was, my father had the dream of now going into politics and was becoming a parent, and my mother would not be able to handle that."
Present day, Lyle is realizing something that accumulated, and then he pauses and then completely changes the subject and starts talking about politics, which is something that hasn't been brought up at all in the conversation before this.
Yeah, it's completely unrelated from what he was just saying.
So to me, there's a few things. Like, one, I feel like the statement he makes before he talks about politics is like an obvious, like, allusion, I guess, to what the brothers testified to that really happened. He didn't say, I realized that my father was still sexually abusing my brother, but he says, like, he realized a number of things that all accumulated. And then also, it was Eric and I getting together that caused them to kill their parents?
And I totally get what you're saying. I feel it's a point where he changes the topic because I think he gets a little bit too close to the actual truth. Like, they came together, right? Like, Eric told him what was happening. He's talking about it quite vaguely, but I think he realizes that, oh, wait, I'm getting a bit too close to this. And then he brings up something completely irrelevant afterwards and unrelated.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just another part of the tape that supports the defense's theory on the tape. or specifically Lyle and Eric's testimony about what those sessions were about,
right?
They testified that they were basically just going along with what Ozil's theories were and trying to appease him. And that's exactly what this part of the tape illustrates. Lyle is sort of just going through the motions, talking about things. Then suddenly when he's getting a bit too close to the actual truth, he switches subjects and sort of goes back on this sort of ramble about something kind of irrelevant, almost because he's getting too close to the actual truth.
Mm-hmm. Another major spot where the brothers are discussing something and then change the subject because they're getting too close to the truth is kind of about midway through the tape. Lyle is talking and he says,
"My feeling was that with him deciding to enter into politics, it was her doom. It was over. There was no escape. And Eric and I were getting, he was on the verge of going to UCLA."
And then Ozil actually does interrupt Lyle here.
"No escape from what? When you say no escape from what?"
Which is like, good job, like, good therapy moment.
I know, what a rarity. Ozil's actually doing his job for once.
And then Lyle, there's like a solid pause before Lyle responds. You can hear him kind of fumbling around for an answer.
No escape from being separated from my dad in an environment, or in a relationship where she had no identity, and she was too public. She was being battered."
Okay. Reference to physical abuse here. And then he changes the subject and talks about how moving from New Jersey to California was, like, horrible for her, and that she felt comfortable in New Jersey, but then moving to California, she lost all her friends, and she, you know, he kind of goes back to this move, which was 3 years before. So, you know, right before this, he was talking about Eric being on the verge of going to UCLA, which was in 1989, and then he changes the subject to the old news of 3 years before.
Yeah. This is such an interesting point of the tape as well, because it's definitely one of the more blatant parts where you really, really see that.
"There is a great pause there, and you actually can almost count. There is a real hesitation, which is unusual, coming from this, what we've already heard. And then he launches into this, the end of the sentence, where he actually takes language that we've heard before from Dr. Ozil, so that there's a real switch, if you will, from no escape to this last part of the sentence.
Which is being separated from my dad?
Yes.
Does that sound evasive to you?
Yes, it does.
Is it similar to what happened in the previous page when he started to talk about him and Eric getting together and then he changed the subject?
Yes. So you now have two examples, yes.
Is this something that patients do? I think you've already said patients don't just come in and start, you know, ripping open their heart, laying all the painful stuff on the table.
Yes.
Is it typical in the course of therapy that a patient may start to talk about something sensitive that they don't want to tell you?
Yes.
And then they'll just shift gears in the middle, and when you put the two pieces together, it's sort of nonsense?
Yes, and you almost can see them censoring what they're going to say. So that's a very critical time to try to pick up, because it's pretty obvious a lot of times.
If they really were telling the truth on this tape, and they were speaking about the reasons why they felt controlled, and they killed their parents because they felt controlled, why didn't Lyle say here, for example, no escape from being completely controlled by my dad and my mum in this really strict environment? And, like, he doesn't say that, which is the motive that is given on the tape for why he was killed. So it's kind of him going a bit off track in terms of what the conversation is actually about.
Yeah. I don't know. That section is, like, I think really key.
I think it is quite significant, yeah. And what I find funny about this specific part is when Lyle says no escape from being separated from my dad in an intimate environment. I feel like that's kind of is true, but he's saying it in a way that is so vague without getting into the actual details. Like, the way I was thinking about it, right, was sort of because Lyle had, well, in his own mind, right, had quite a close relationship with Jose, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that was quite important to him. But during this whole crisis time in the week before the killings, where he's trying to bargain with Jose, I feel like he's sort of alluding to that time here. They're trying to separate from their dad, who's always kept them in quite like a close environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the way he says it there, he kind of is describing what was happening at the time, but he's being incredibly vague about it so as to not give away like what was actually happening at the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like, all these moments where they start getting close to the truth and then change the subject, it's like, you know, that should have been a clue to Ozeal that there was something else going on. A proper therapist would have actually recognized that, like, Lyle is avoiding something here.
Yeah, I mean, like, immediately after, right, Ozeal sort of just goes along with what Lyle has just said.
Yeah, he never goes back to the fact that he very obviously caught Lyle off guard when he was questioning him about this whole no escape thing. Like,
yeah, like, his follow-up question has nothing to do with what he previously sort of caught Lyle on, because Lyle doesn't really give a satisfactory answer. Like, there's no Ozeal saying, you wanted to be separated from your dad in an intimate environment. What do you mean by that? Like, there's no follow-up to that at all.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, to me, shows that what the defense said about the tape and about how Ozeal was conducting therapy was true, that, like, he wasn't really actually conducting therapy. It was almost more like a conversation. He just kind of let Lyle talk about things, and then Ozeal would talk about things, but not really, like, pry at all. That, I think, goes along with what the defense was saying about, like, what Ozeal was doing was not really therapy.
Mm-hmm.
It was, let's talk about this, because, like, I want to hear about it, kind of.
So I can blackmail you later.
Yeah. I think that this tape corroborates the defense's position that Ozeal was a bad therapist. And that his motivation wasn't to actually, like, get the truth out of these patients, but was, like, to manipulate and control them.
Yeah.
To start it off, this tape starts in the middle of a sentence.
Oh, yeah.
And it ends in the middle of a sentence, which is not proper therapeutic practice at all.
I feel like the fact that it starts in the middle of a conversation as well should already be raising some suspicions. Maybe there was something said in the previous part of the conversation before the tape recorder was turned on that, I don't know, could conflict with Ozeal's theories. A lot of this tape is Ozeal introducing his own theories and ideas. Like, he suggests and leads a lot of the conversation. He's manipulative on the tape. He's controlling on the tape. And because, like, also the brothers reject a lot of what he says, and, like, even just outright ignore what he says a lot as well.
Yeah. Which is exactly what the defense said about him, is how the brothers described him. In Lyle's testimony about Ozeal and about the sessions that they had with him, Lyle says that Ozeal had a tendency to go on long rants about his perceptions of their family and the brothers and why they might have done this, and just talk and talk and talk, and then say something like, isn't that what you thought? And that's exactly how Ozeal acts on this tape. Like, there are sections where he's just going on and on and on and on about what he thought about their family. And that's not how you're supposed to perform therapy. That's not the point of therapy. He should be asking the brothers to do that instead of just continuing to talk about his view on their family.
Oh, that's a good way of putting it.
There's my rant about this.
Yeah.
In this tape, Ozeal does exactly what Lyle said he was doing, including, like, using words that the brothers didn't use to describe their parents. Like, he called Kitty pitiful.
Yeah. Well, controlling is a good one, actually. I think in the tape, the brothers never, ever describe their parents as being controlling, but it's something that Ozil brings up numerous times.
And in changing the subject, does he use a word that he uses very, very frequently in this tape?
Yes, he does.
And what is the word that he uses here when he changes the subject?
He uses the word control.
Now, starting at page 24, line 25, when Dr. Ozil changes the subject to the father totally controlling the mother.
Yes.
Through the next 3 pages to page 27, did I ask you, Dr. Burgess, to count how many times over those little less than 2.5 pages Dr. Ozil used some form of the word control?
Yes, you did.
When you add up how many times he used some form of the word control in each and every time he spoke on those pages, how many times did he use the word?
I counted 13 times.
And did either Eric or Lyle Menendez, over the same course of time in their remarks, did either one of them ever use the word control here?
No, they did not.
It's just his own thoughts and feelings. I mean, what the brothers themselves said, right? When he would go on these rants, like, sometimes he would say things that, like, were true and, like, were accurate about their parents. And then sometimes he would say things that weren't. But I think that comes from Ozil already forming his own thoughts and, like, feelings about the parents when he met them personally.
Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty clear that he's not using this, like, session to learn anything about what the brothers are saying. He's there to, like, have a conversation with them and tell them what he thought.
Yeah. And specifically, like, tell them what he thinks they should be feeling, or, like, tells them, oh, no, this is how you feel, right? Or this caused this to happen, and this is why you did this, basically.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of forcing his own opinions on everything.
When you're talking about family, so we're talking about what's wrong with your family, but in a sense, what's really wrong with your family is there wasn't a family. I mean, there was no communication. There was no closeness, there was no bonding in your family. The only people who had a bond really in your family, I mean, really, were the two of you.
When Dr. Burgess is describing, like, what a therapy session is supposed to be like, something she brings up is that in a therapy session, the therapist is supposed to elicit the thoughts and feelings from the patient. They're supposed to use the patient's own words and explore with that patient areas that the patient brings into the conversation. You don't get any of that here at all. It's all Ozil's thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, and he even, like, interrupts his patients to put in his own theories instead of, like you said, eliciting that information or, like, listening to what his patient was saying. He's interrupting them to say what he thinks.
Yeah. But I also think, don't you think it's... What a funny coincidence it is that throughout the entire trial, before they even know this tape is going to be admitted as evidence, so many witnesses are saying, yep, Ozil is, he lies a lot, he's manipulative, he's controlling, he's just overall kind of a dick. Then this tape comes in, which is supposed to be about the brothers and their confession, and most of it is just illustrating all of those previous points that the defense has gone over about him.
Pretty much.
Because in his testimony, he makes out that he was like some scared little, like, innocent therapist who was just afraid of the brothers and was just worried about what they could possibly do. And then when you listen to him on this tape, it is the polar opposite of that.
Yeah. No, he does not sound scared of them at all. In Hazel Thornton's book, who was like one of the first trial jurors, she said that, like, when she watched Ozil testify, she didn't think that he was credible. mostly because of the cross-examination, which we already talked about. Then when they listened to this tape, that just, like, confirmed for her that he was a liar.
I mean, she called him Dr. Weasel.
Dr. Weasel, yeah.
Because he weaseled his way out of every question.
It's so true. Yeah. Not only does Ozeal, like, go on all these rants about his impressions of the parents, but when the brothers do talk and say, either disagree with Ozeal or agree with him and then elaborate on, you know, their feelings and thoughts about their parents, he doesn't follow up on what they say. He always just comes back to his theory about it. I don't think there's any way to listen to this tape and think that he is, like, asking any of the right questions, basically.
Yeah, I mean, considering the amount of stuff, like, clues and hints he misses, yeah, he's not asking the right questions.
There's a number of times where, like, the brothers say concerning things, to put it lightly, about how they view their family, and Ozeal just doesn't acknowledge it. Or sometimes he acknowledges it, but he doesn't, like, pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think a great example is where Lyle describes his childhood as basic training. Like, military basic training.
Because he had trained us, like, basic training. By 21 years, it was a basic training course.
To do what?
On how to survive and how to do what was necessary. And
to survive by living without him or by telling him to be?
By living without him. Mm-hmm. And that, because you never had lived with him anyway.
Which, to me, is implying abuse.
Yeah, or at least some sort of, like, quite strenuous living conditions.
It's reminding me of how people who went to school with the brothers all knew that their father was, like, really pushing them extremely hard in tennis.
Yeah. Like, someone on Reddit who was in Lyle's class at PDS replied to, like, a comment about, I think it was to do with this case, like, quote, "Felt badly for him. Everyone knew his dad was a maniac pushing him. When my dad told me the parents were murdered, my immediate reply was Lyle did it," which I think speaks for itself.
Yeah, but bringing it back to the tape, like, describing your childhood as, like, army training is, like, pretty severe, and much more severe than how Lyle had been talking about his father on the tape before this. Dr. Burgess had a good quote about this. Like, she said, "This opens the childhood up as a fully explorable area." But Ozeal doesn't do that. Yeah. And then after that, the brothers say that their childhood taught them to survive, which is a red flag.
Yeah, again, once again.
And Ozeal doesn't really follow up on that either.
It's like he's not even listening to them.
Yeah. First of all, why are you not following up on the fact that your patient just described their life as basic training? But then, why are you, like, going against what your patient just said and starting to, like, argue with him about his relationship with his father?
Yeah.
I mean, my theory is that it's because it went against what Ozeal actually thought.
Yeah, I mean, defense's contention about this tape, right, is that they are Ozeal's theories, and they've been decided upon before the tape even started, and then they agreed that they would talk about these things on the tape. In that context, it's sort of like Ozeal was trying to stick to these, like, his theories about what they've agreed upon, like, what they'll talk about, but the brothers sort of go off track.
Yeah.
But Ozil's not concerned about that. He's like, no, 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 we're talking about this. This is how you felt, and this is you felt like you never lived with him.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure Dr. Burgess talks about this, but, like, if he was conducting proper therapy, instead of, like, trying to change this, or trying to get the subject back to what he thought, Ozeal should have followed up on what the brothers said and tried to get out of them, like, okay, you just said something that doesn't really follow with what I think, but why did you say that?
Mm-hmm.
This tape makes me really angry.
Yeah. It really does. Like, the more you read it and analyze it, the more you're like, wow, like... I don't know, every single time I read, read transcripts from the tape as well, I'm just like... I still, to this day, do not understand how those jurors in the second trial listened to this tape and were like, yeah, first degree murder. Like, they must have just, like, read the tape without actually thinking about anything on the tape.
Yeah. Something that I found interesting in listening to this tape is that there's some times when Ozeal is talking where he actually kind of suggests that he knows more about the abuse and about the truth of the case. One of the main parts is towards the end, Ozeal says something. He's talking to Lyle about Eric, and he says, "I know you stepped in to sort of save him," which to me is like, he's saving Eric? That doesn't fit at all with the mercy killing theory.
What are your opinions on it? Like, do you think Ozeal actually knew, or did he just, like, suspect certain things, or...
I don't think he actually knew, but I feel like he probably suspected certain things about, like, the brothers' dynamic, that, like, you know, Lyle was more the one to take the lead in general. But, like, this statement, it's like, why would he say that if he didn't actually know the truth, you know? Like, the only thing I can think of is that maybe he suspected that, like, Lyle kind of took the lead to, I guess, rescue Eric from, like, their parents' toxic relationship. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
No, I feel similarly. I think he probably assumed certain things, like some abusive behavior, like emotional abuse from probably both parents, and maybe possibly some physical abuse from Jose. But I think at most he, like, suspected certain things and he sort of made assumptions. And that's why he could come to certain assumptions about the brothers' dynamic as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he actually knew what the abuse actually was.
Yeah, I don't think he actually suspected that, like, that level of sexual abuse was going on, or that Lyle had actually, like, saved Eric from Jose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he did, it, to me, it shows how manipulative and horrible a person he was, that he would then turn around and testify against them and testify about this, like, completely illogical theory.
Mm-hmm.
If he actually knew that that wasn't true.
I mean, isn't that kind of what he said when he was testifying? He's like, oh... Or he said, like, in an interview, I think it was with Diane Sawyer is her name?
Mm-hmm.
In, like, an interview with her, he says that, like, it pains me to have to, like, give evidence and testify against my patient, or something, like, along those lines, and it's the most ridiculous sounding thing. Like, the man is... God.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go off into a tangent about, like, how ridiculous Ozeal is again.
I think probably, like, the worst section of this tape, and, like, the best example of Ozeal being, like, a horrible therapist, is what, I think Leslie described it as the touchy-feely section. Basically, Ozeal makes the brothers, like, look into each other's eyes and tell each other that they love each other and, like, hug each other, even though they're, like, very obviously saying that they don't want to do that and, like, resisting very strongly to doing that.
What am I supposed to tell that you really worry about it?
Disturbing to listen to.
Yeah. It's kind of unethical, right?
I mean, yeah, I think so.
It's basically forcing his patients to do something they don't want to do.
Yeah, and then he, like, laughs at them.
Yeah, I love Eric very much. Can you tell a little more, Susan? It's a little too.
Come on, you can do this. I know you
do. We hate that hugging shit, by the way. We fucking hate that.
You know what? I don't care if you do it. I don't care if you do it.
Just because you said that. Come on.
No.
You know what? You may have trouble.
All right.
Come on.
Which is horrendous.
I feel it's quite interesting, though, that Lyle says, I know. I feel like it kind of does put into perspective, like, how the brothers feel about what they're doing, right? Like, they know that they're basically just going along with whatever Ozil was saying, and that he's kind of like a shady guy. They don't like him. They're just doing this because they're afraid he's going to go to the police, basically.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's like Lyle saying, like, I know you don't actually care about me.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, what I want and my feelings, like, so he's obviously not going to tell him, like, the truth, because he knows that Ozil doesn't care about what Lyle wants.
Yeah. I feel like this is also part of the tape that, yeah, like you said, right, it's super uncomfortable to listen to, and because you could just hear Eric crying in the background, and it's, I don't know what the word is to describe it, it's like...
It makes me feel icky.
Yeah. But also because of the way Eric is crying in the background as well, like, it just makes you feel so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, he's clearly distressed. Like, it's not a laughing matter, so it shows my personality traits, right? I laugh whenever I feel uncomfortable. Even just talking about it makes me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because he's so, like, distressed, especially at this point during the tape, and he's not getting, like, the proper help.
Yeah, this, like, whole section comes after a section of the tape which I guess we'll go into this later, but, like, it's pretty much just Eric crying and, like, rambling about random things, and, like, it's, to me, it's, like, very obvious that he's, like, very emotionally unstable. Trying to imagine it happening, like, you know, not just, like, the voices, but what was going on, like, in the room at the time is, like, how did he think that this was, like, important or, like, a good thing for the brothers to do?
Yeah.
You love mine? We're in the presence of each other in different ways. You know, would you love mine?
Yes.
You told me that between the two of you, if one of you has been dying, you'd rather you die and get out of there. Did you say that? Did you say that? Yes.
To me, it says more about, like, you know, in their childhood, they weren't taught to share their feelings and they weren't taught to express their emotions. And that was, like, something that you guarded away. And that was, like, a part of the emotional abuse that they went through. And then, you know, on top of that, the physical abuse, like, victims of physical and sexual abuse often don't like to be touched, and they don't like that physical contact. If Ozil had handled this appropriately, like, it could have led to, you know, revealing why they were so resistant to expressing their feelings this way, but instead he, like, pressured them for, like, a long time until they did it. I don't know. It's, like, a disturbing but also interesting section.
Yeah. I think another part of this section kind of links back with the whole going off topic again theme with the tape. Literally during this section, Ozil says, why are you crying, to Eric? And then Eric says, he didn't know about it, which, and then Lyle cuts him off and then goes on this tangent about, oh, our family worked behind closed doors, just like politics. To me, that comes across as Eric is about to say something that Lyle doesn't want him to say, and then sort of interjects and then goes on this whole other tangent. Because before that, it's the part where Ozil says, you told me that between the two of you, if one of you was going to die, you'd rather you die and that Lyle live, is that right? Eric is crying, says yes, and then Ozil says, why are you crying? To which Eric replies, he didn't know about it, which it doesn't line up with what Ozil previously said.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that is a very blatant example of Eric maybe is about to say something a bit close to maybe even, like, the sexual abuse, right? And then that's why Lyle cuts him off there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I never even caught that. I don't know. To me, this whole section is just like, how could those second trial jurors listen to this and be like, oh yeah, totally normal and fine.
Yeah.
Like, the brothers are murderers and yeah, that's the end.
Mm-hmm. Oh god, I wish I could speak to, like, Andrew Wolfgang and just, like, go through this tape with him.
Andrew, if you're out there.
I'd just love to know his opinion.
Thanks for listening to part one of this episode. Check out part two for the rest.